The following program is presented for entertainment purposes only.
Okay, so it's not Monday night, and this isn't ABC, but the parallels between the NFL and small business are uniquely connected. This, my friends, will be confirmed today by our special guest, two-time Super Bowl winning head coach, Tom Flores. Good afternoon, Arizona. It's just after 1 o'clock. I am Steve Henry, and this is the Steve Henry Show, an interactive hour that produces ideas and solutions for small business with a Christian perspective, which, by the way, seems to be a problem for some according to recent reviews. Jealousy is that nephew of Uncle Pride, a surefire path that leads to failure if left to dwell upon. I wrote the best-selling book, The Playbook for Small Businesses, and checking in over at the Amazon headquarters right now, I see that we are ranked number 3 in the country on Kindle under the marketing heading. To receive that free copy of that best-selling book, just simply go to my website and register. It just takes a couple seconds. www.yourbusinessboost.com. That's yourbusinessboost.com. I even pay your postage. I mean, my goodness. You can also Facebook that request on my Facebook page simply by clicking the like. I've got a question for you, ladies and gentlemen. What does running a small business and the NFL have in common? The answer, they both require a great, and I emphasize the word great, coach in order to be competitive and victorious. Allow me to introduce two of the greatest coaches, I think, that ever played the game of life and football. I love what Jesus didn't do while selecting players for his team. He did not select any player who was a top round draft pick. He didn't care if they were injured or marked. In fact, he preferred it. He didn't care nor listen to what the media around him had to say. And he didn't seek the best, only the committed. How will you know if your coaching style was successful? History will judge you accordingly. Over 2,000 years ago, one man coached 12 players and formed a team that still exists today. Now that is a great coach. Over 30 years ago, Tom Flores, in only a second year as head coach, led his underdog wildcard team to a first ever Super Bowl victory, a feat that had never, ever been accomplished in the NFL before. 2 years later, Coach Flores produced another Super Bowl victory in Super Bowl 18, which incidentally hasn't been repeated by the Raiders since. So what does a great coach look like and why? Today we're going to find out, is it so important to a small business? I can recall when I lived in the Bay Area, there was this joke about the players who played for the Raider team. The only prerequisite to playing in Sunday's game was the spelling of their name from their arrest record had to match exactly their game day roster. Now, presumably a very poor joke, but there may have been a reason to ponder its validity. Given a listen to this audio, how MVP quarterback Jim Plunkett describes how Tom Flores coached his players into two Super Bowl victories. Give a listen.
With all the diverse personalities and, you know, guys not exactly abiding by curfews, you know, either during the year or at the Super Bowl itself, Tom had his hands full, let me put it that way. You know, but he, you know, he found a way to, you know, to bring us together, to prepare for each and every game. And it's probably his low-key personality was part of it, you know, making sure we did our job before we went out and had the kind of fun that they were known for having. But, you know, he was very successful, and to think that he doesn't, you know, get any recognition for the job he did, you know, he won 2 Super Bowls in 3 years, basically, and he's overlooked by a slew of other coaches who won one, lost one, you know, or just won one period. And why are they better coaches than Coach Flores? You know, he did his job. He did it with, you know, a cast of characters that, you know, probably a lot of other coaches would have got rid of because they couldn't handle him. But Coach Flores handled them and had them play well for him.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, is a great coach. A great coach looks at you and sees not your failings, inadequacies, or disfigurations, but what God gave you to become, what you were placed here to accomplish. A great coach is someone who has the natural ability to cultivate that posture of believing in and seeing the best in others. Because when someone believes in us, we discover we are able to accomplish things we never ever believe possible. That legacy can continue forever. In fact, in 1963, a young woman quit her sales training position at a large direct selling company while being passed up for a promotion by a man she trained for twice the pay. Sitting at her kitchen table, she prayed on God to assist her with her small business dream. Consulting her husband, who tragically died a month before the launch, and her 20-year-old son, she still decided to go forward and started her own business. With $5,000 in savings, she set out to create a company dedicated to making life more beautiful for women. It was founded not on the competitive rule, but on the golden rule, on praising people to success, and on the principle of placing faith first, family second, and career third. She became one of the greatest coaches to women entrepreneurs, training over 1.8 million to become independent beauty consultants in 30 world markets for the Mary Kay Company. Mary Kay Ash continues to inspire, enrich, and empower women around the globe to believe that they can do great things. Interestingly, she's been in heaven for over 10 years. Now that's a great coach. This confirms what I think separates a good coach from a great one. The complete understanding your life is like a reservoir. You draw from it when you work with others. Great coaching is the art of drawing things out of people. And it's hard to draw out of others if you haven't dug your own well and learned to draw deeply from it. This is vital because your team will never experience a great coach until you are willing to sacrifice yourself by relinquishing ego and pride by way of humility. My friends, the key component to sacrifice begins with humility. Listen carefully. I want you to get this. This is important. Humility is not denying the power you have, but it's admitting the power comes through you and not from you. If you deny the power you've been given, you lie. If you've been given a fine voice, to depreciate it is to show lack of appreciation for it. If you've been given a talent for making money, and I believe it is a talent, then use it and be the trustee of it. Your talent, if it's administration, then help things to happen. I don't believe God is giving any talent for irresponsibility, and that's what we're showing when we fail to recognize, appreciate, and use the talent we've been given. Whether it's being scooped up and carried off by your teammates with Gatorade dripping everywhere, or making your first $1 million, let's never forget, it's not you, but He who gives you the ability to perform the gifts He gave you. I think Proverbs 18:12 sums it up this way. Before a man's destruction, his heart is haughty, ego-centered, and confident, but humility, it comes before honor. How does all this relate to coaching a small business? Well, according to J.D. Power and Associates, the number one reason behind an employee quitting their job is dissatisfaction within the workplace, stemming from management's failure to understand what I believe Howard Schultz from Starbucks gets exactly right. And I quote, about treating people with respect and dignity. It's not just words, but a creed we live by every day. You can't expect your employees to exceed the expectations of your customers if you don't exceed the employees' expectations of management. That's the contract, close quote. The first step, it would appear then, is to build your stadium, your place of business, if you will. Next, you'll begin to staff it with players. And if they're not leaving every day and telling their friends and family what a wonderful place you built in which to work and what a great inspiration you are to your team, returning with this pent-up anticipation of what advancement might take place tomorrow, your company is destined to eventually fail. You don't think so? You don't have to concern yourself with this, coach? Nope. My people only care about what they make, and as long as they take a good paycheck home, that's all they need. Really? In a recent poll, over 60% of American workers said they're disgruntled, bored, and unappreciated at their current position. Huh. This doesn't sound as if this is a money matter to me. Okay, so you're one of these great coaches. But how do you keep your team focused on the victory? From design to production, here are some steps you can take to keep things humming towards victory. I use four principles to coach what I believe was my best team ever. I started the $5,000 car store in 2000 with two cars and $7,000 in cash. And in a recent buyout, sold the endeavor for $750,000. But the most amazing thing is every team member that worked for me no longer works for the new ownership. And many have followed me to our new enterprise, Desi Boo's Eatery, now just a month old. The number one, don't be afraid to shake things up a bit. Let your team see you as fun, with a sense of humor. I love to play practical yet creative jokes on my players. Juan, my detailer, was an easy target. I took one of my old briefcases, I stuffed it full of some cash, placed my handgun, a ski mask. I wrote out a little note emulating a bank robber's request for a holdup, and I kind of wedged it under the front seat of a car he was detailing. My friends, you wouldn't believe the outbreak of laughter that erupted for those who stood by when he came running into our jam-packed lobby one Friday afternoon holding this briefcase with a look on his face that still makes me laugh so hard when I think about it. Number two, give every team player the confidence they're an integral function of the team. You do this by thanking them for their service. Without you, and I quote, this team wouldn't be the championship team it's become. From the mechanics to the GM, my team had a personal interest in my company's victory and seldom missed a day of work or allowed anybody to disrupt our momentum. This allowed me to keep a lean, productive staff, which actually saved me money in the long run. Number three, turn your customers into fans. A customer may only patronize your business once, but a fan will return with their friends, family, and coworkers. A great coach acknowledges this by recognizing how to appreciate people. For instance, take a moment to ask their opinion about how something might be better handled at your company. Everyone loves to feel singled out and special. And number four, do you love your position? You'll know if you do by how well you and your players perform on your team's game day. Most of us are aware, in the NFL, the team spends practicing all week, usually for Sunday. This is when, after preparing all week, all the films and all the meetings, it's finally come down to 60 minutes on the stadium clock. Everything's on the line, win or lose. What is a game day as it relates to small business? Well, in small business, your game day is just as crucial. It's that one day of the week, or perhaps month, that means everything to the success of your company. For my friends at I guess it was a pizza parlor. They were a little shy, but I'll include them. They prepare 75% of their weekly business on Friday and Saturday nights, usually between 5 and 9. That's their game day. With over 40 deliveries and an hour wait to get into place, management fully understands what's at stake. They must ensure everyone is equipped and coached to handle the hundreds of customers. If a breakdown ensues, it could mean the end for my favorite pizza place. When it's all over, though, you can feel the love and joy of successful victory when the owners allow friends and family to participate in their after-hours Feed the Team meal. And no, they don't serve pizza. For me, at my car dealership, it was Thursdays. I didn't have the inventory available to me, so I had to travel out of state. Thursdays was my game day. I'd get up at 3 o'clock, leave the house, get to the airport, fly to probably Phoenix was a good spot for me at some point. Summers, no. But I'd catch a shuttle, get to the auction, have about an hour and a half to look over 60 cars. I'd struggle, get inside, fight with 3,000 dealers, hopefully end up with 15 cars, put them on a transport, load them back to Albuquerque, catch the shuttle back to the airport, back to Albuquerque, and finish my day. But you know what? My staff, my team was with me every step of the way. They wanted victory. What'd you buy? What's wrong with it? When will it be here? They were thoroughly engaged. And for me, your players, it's very important for them to know what you do and you love doing it. Using these four principles will make a difference in coaching your small business. When we return, one of the all-time great coaches in the NFL joins us to share his wisdom on the parallels between coaching in the NFL and managing a small business. There are only two phone lines left, so you want to get in here. This is a very an awesome opportunity to speak to one of the best coaches in the NFL. 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Also, I want to mention that free book. Jump on the website, yourbusinessboost.com. That's yourbusinessboost.com. I'll get you out one of our free books. And also the Facebook page. Everything that we post from the website is also on the Facebook page. Sponsorship, too. There's a nice segment there on the sponsorship. Ken LeBlanc, Public Relations Director. We'd love to hear from you if you want to become a sponsor to the Steve Henry Show. We'll be back momentarily. Don't go away, folks. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Steve Henry Show. If you've read my book, then you know the heartfelt passion and respect I have for President Ronald Reagan, both as a Christian and as a president. He served us well with what I believe were his best intentions. On Super Bowl night back in 1983, he didn't divulge when speaking on the phone to head coach Tom Flores, from whom he rooted for, given the demographics of where he worked, lived, and played. But he did acknowledge a great coaching job. I want you to give a listen to this little short little audio if you...
The President, Tom, a very special fan, the nation's number one sporting fan, President Ronald Reagan, is standing by live in the White House. We're not going to have any telephone call breakup tonight. We're going to hook you up live right now with President Reagan. But Mr. President.
Coach, Tom Flores.
Yes, Mr. President.
Congratulations. That was a wonderful win tonight. I just think you ought to know, though, that you've given me some problems. I have already had a call from Moscow. They think that Marcus Allen is a new secret weapon, and they insist that we dismantle it. Now, they've given me an idea about that team that I just saw there of yours. If you'd turn them over to us, we'd put them in silos, and we wouldn't have to build the MX missile. But it's been great. You proved tonight that a good defense can be also be a pretty good offense.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I really appreciate it. We played a good game tonight. Our players were just tremendous in every phase. We totally dominated. I think we proved to the whole world that the silver and black is the best team.
Well, you certainly were from what we saw there on the field tonight. And Again, my congratulations to you. God bless all of you. And there isn't anything that I could say that would make you any happier than you all must be.
Well, thank you. I wish you were here to enjoy it with us, but I appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Tom Flores, this was one of the finest prepared football teams I have ever seen. You went right to work after beating Seattle. You kept your eye on Washington all the way. This whole organization was so confident when I was around.
Well, this is such a great group of guys, and you know, we just go out and do our job. We don't pay attention to what is said about us. We don't pay attention to all the hoopla and the distractions or whatever. We have a job to do, and we get it done, and it's just been tremendous.
All right, Tom, again, congratulations.
Ladies and gentlemen, to get a call into Mr. Flores, 602-508-0960 here on KKNT. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my sincere pleasure and honor to introduce head coach Tom Flores to the Steve Henry Show. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, Steve. It's nice to talk to you after many, many years when we were, when you were growing up in Lafayette, California.
Well, I never had the opportunity to tell you thank you for that, Tom, and the quality time I spent at your house growing up as a young boy, the wisdom you shared. You were the Raiders' first quarterback at that time, had I known. Did you ever imagine you'd end up as their head coach winning Super Bowls one day?
No, they don't know. When I first started this game many, many years ago, there was no Super Bowl. There were championship games, and the Super Bowl was just... the championships were just happy and eventful sporting events, but nothing like the Super Bowl became, and nothing like it has become today. It was just bigger than life.
Indeed, it has. You know, throughout my playbook, Tom, I point out the many comparisons between a small business owner and a head coach in the NFL. The one that comes to mind instantly is our ability to not be afraid to risk the big play. Coach Flores, how do you prepare your mind for this?
Well, one thing that you have to realize, and it's something that we always instill in ourselves and others that follow us, is you can't be afraid of success. If you're going to be afraid of success, you won't be successful. In other words, what that means is don't be afraid to fail, because somewhere along the way, you're going to fail. I mean, no one has been perfect. Life isn't perfect. And without... if you listed some of the great minds in the history of our world, our country, how many times did they fail before they were successful? And it holds true in football, although a lot of the failures that you face in football are trial ones where that's why you practice, to help eliminate some of the failures. So you prepare and have confidence in what you're doing, and make sure that those people that you surround yourself with, that you work with, that don't work for you, they work with you, right. Make sure that they're well prepared. And because that, to me, that's probably the best confidence you could have ever going into football, you're being prepared.
That's great advice. So the fear of failure, it has to be eliminated from the equation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fear of failure is just, should never be an option. It'll happen, but it should never be an option, because you're going to fail. And then the key of successful people is, how do you rebound from failure?
That's a great point. Very good. I also heard you say, another parallel here between small business owners and a head coach. You never call in sick in football. Did you ever miss a game as a head coach?
No, I never missed as a head coach or as a player. Played the sick, coached sick. Unfortunately, it's a little different in football, because you only play one game a week.
Right,
so
right.
If you happen to be sick that game, you still have to play. If, in basketball or baseball or other sports where you're playing multiple games, you might miss a game. But in the athletic world, you have to learn to play sick and play and coach hurt. So that's just the nature of the business, and it toughens you up. It makes you tough, sometimes maybe to an incredibly stupid level, but you do what you have to do because that's just the nature of the business.
That's right. And that heartfelt passion goes out to business owners, too, where I just don't feel like coming in today. It's unacceptable. It just doesn't work that way in small business either. Did you?
Well, there's too many people that depend on you.
That's right.
You know, it's kind of interesting because you're almost put on a different level. So you can't be sick. You're the boss.
That's right. Going back real quick to President Reagan, was that a surprise to you when you were handed the phone and it happened to be the President of the United States at that time?
No, I kind of anticipated it because, you know, it was tradition. Unfortunately, my first Super Bowl in January of 81, I got a call telling me that the President apologized for not being able to call after the game because, but at that time, they had just released the hostages from Iran.
Right.
And he was quite busy with other matters, and I understood that. Yeah. So, but it was it's quite a thrill and an honor when you're called by the President of the United States. And they had a hookup, television hookup. So I was looking right at him and he was looking right at me in the locker room. So that was quite a thrill.
Wow, I never knew that about you. Yeah, one of my favorite presidents and favorite coaches. That's going to be a clip. I happened to come across that about a few days ago, and that was incredible. How important, Tom, are fans to a team? We've got about 1 minute, so we'll probably carry this over, and I got some calls waiting also. But how important are your fans to a team?
Very important. You always hear the adage home field advantage, and there is a home field advantage. There's two things that are important to home field advantage. One is the adrenaline that the home fans kind of share with you when you come on the field and they're screaming and yelling and cheering you on, and when you score and when you don't score and all the other above.
Right, we're going to talk about that.
Worth.
Yeah, we'll talk about that with Seattle, too, because I know you were in the Kingdom, and that happened to be one of the loudest places.
When we
come back, we've got more questions for Tom. Jim in Oxnard, California. That could be an L.A. Raider fan there, Mr. Flores. We'll be up first when we come back from our break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Steve Henry Show with my special guest, head coach Tom Flores. Tom, I asked you just going to the break there how important fans are to a team. Now, in small business, we have to cultivate our fans through special rights. We have to make them special. We understand how important they are to our stadium and to our small business success. Do the players, do you ask anything of your players or a staff to reach out to the fans there at your local stadium?
Well, you don't really ask the players to do much during the course of a game because they're you want them to focus on the game, but you do ask them to be respectful of the fans, control their own emotions, don't make a fool out of yourself, handle yourself with dignity and pride and some poise, and then when you do see them off of the field, carry the same characteristics. Make sure you handle yourself with pride and professionalism. Sometimes players get a little carried away. Some of the modern players think that it's important that they demonstrate every time they make a play. And I've never been that kind of guy. My teams never did that. I said if you score a touchdown, okay, celebrate a little bit, but don't get crazy and go carried away. But if you make a tackle, you're supposed to make a tackle.
Exactly.
You can get up with it with excitement, but don't, do a dance and things of that nature. So, but fans are important. For instance, you mentioned before we went to break, when I was in Seattle. Seattle, the noise factor, the facts create, and they still do it. It's traditional. They call them the 12th man, and they have a jersey up in the corner of their new beautiful stadium. With a 12th man jersey, the fans have become so sophisticated. That noise level is an advantage to the fans, to the home team.
Largest false start penalties, I guess, in the league.
It's crazy. It's forced teams to go with silent counts, and nowadays almost every team practices a silent count a lot. They'll even use it at home sometimes if it gets a little too loud at home.
Wow. Are fans any different from one market to the other? You had the, I don't know if that's an advantage or disadvantage when you did Los Angeles and Oakland, but across the country, are fans pretty much the same or do they change from region to region?
Well, basically they're the same, but they all have some little peculiarities, some little quirky things. You know, the Raiders right now in Oakland have what they call the black hole at one end zone where they're all, appear to be very wacko, but they're also very nice and loyal. And the commissioner visited the game last year, and he actually sat in the black hole for a quarter during the game and visited with the people. They were tremendous. Those are the same people, so they're not going to get too crazy, but they do look a little wacko. And then Cleveland, you have the dog pound. They're still in the end zone, and they eat dog biscuits for crying. How goofy is that?
They all have
their own little personalities, and every stadium has them. How many times have you seen a cold weather game and kids in colleges are out there with no shirts on?
It's unbelievable.
It's a variety of things, but fans are fans, and they have a good time. And the whole object is have a good time. Have fun. Don't get crazy. And be respectful of those people around you.
That's right. Now, management in small business is vital to especially a small staff. Now, when you're coaching and you're a head coach, you've got 50-plus players. Is it important to know the strengths and weaknesses of every single player on your team?
Yeah, you should. You should. And in sometimes, you know, if you have them long enough, obviously you'll know everything, every single thing about them. But you have to know, and you never stop learning because every stressful situation is different.
That's right.
And players react to those situations, and you have to react with them in case the reaction is an adverse one. You have to make sure you calm them down, and make sure that you get them back on focus. And if the reaction is a positive one, then you want to use that for energy for everybody else without embarrassing the player. So, times have changed. You know, coaches, when I coached, we only had about 7 or 8 assistant coaches, and now there's like 17, 18 assistant coaches. But the squad sizes have gone up, and why there's so many on the staffs nowadays, I really don't know. I mean, I can't answer that one.
Doesn't seem like it's making much of a difference either, really.
I don't think so. Yeah,
to the team itself. So, coaching in today's game versus 1983, in yourself as head coach, that's a big difference. You would say?
Oh yeah, the stress level is still the same. The pressure to win is still the same. The difference is that. Like I said, you have a much larger, twice the amount of assistant coaches. You have a larger squad.
Right.
The exposure is almost unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You have, ESPN 1, 2, and 3, and
right.
Sports,
Tom,
Fox, this.
And we've got one of your fans from Los Angeles, I believe, coming up next right after the break. Stay with me, Tom. We've got just one more segment. Jim, you're up next. Talk to you soon. We'll be back. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Steve Henry Show, KKNT 960. It's about 17 minutes before the top of the hour. You are listening to the best bumper music in all of talk radio. Those phone call lines, 602-508-0960 if you're local. That's 602-508-0960. And we have Jim from Oxnard, California. You sound like Jim. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how are you doing this afternoon, Jim?
Good, how are you?
Good. Could you be an ex-LA Raider fan? Is that possible?
Oh, well, sure.
Wow. Do you have a question for Coach Flores today?
Sure. Hi, Tom. I just heard about the special moment for you about hearing from President Ronald Reagan. That had to be a great special moment in your life.
Yeah, it was. I mean, not too many people get to talk to the president, especially at the high point in my life, my professional life, along with the rest of the team that day, that afternoon, that evening, and the president calling and taking the time to call and being such a fan. It was great. It was great. And especially since the president was from California himself.
Right, right. Well, I'm glad to hear you're going to be on the Steve Henry show. You know, I've read Steve's book, The Playbook for Small Businesses, and it's a great, great book to read for anybody starting out in business. One thing that struck me in the book was, you know, the difference of a customer that, or in your case, you know, spectator and a fan, you know, which you've been talking about. You know, I was a store manager for a large supermarket chain, and I built my fan base only after, you know, many years being in the same store to be transferred after years of building the business. It was always hard when I lost my fans because I was transferred too far away for my following to, you know, even follow me. My question to you is, when you were in L.A., what do you suppose happened to the Southern California fans left behind, and did they remain fans?
Great question.
Well, the Raider fans, you know, the one thing about sports fans is that the local one, the ones that were in stadiums, they were the ones that were upset about when we moved from Oakland to L.A. and then the L.A. ones when they moved back to Oakland. But the fans all over the country and those that watched on TV still were able to do that. So sports is a little bit different than say your business when you transfer or when you go to another venue for your business, because your fans are really those people in that area. Whereas in sports, they're all over the country, all over the world, in fact. But still, they're fans, and you miss them, and they miss you, and you'd like to be able to still connect, but it's pretty hard to do. And but it's a little easier, like I said, in sports, because you are still on TV, you're still on the news, and they either love you or they hate you.
Right. Oh, well, okay, great, thanks. Well, I guess even last week, you know, when Laura was on, she talked about the people that were addicted. And I guess, you know, you kind of look at that the same thing with the football and being out, you know, all over the country. People do get addicted to the team, and it doesn't affect them as much as, you know, being a local team, out of L.A. and being moving to somewhere else.
Yeah, we have fans all over the place, and you know, in fact, we had our when we moved to L.A., we had our training camp right there in Oxnard for many years.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Nice little community, yeah.
And Tom,
yeah,
I'm just curious, Tom. What did happen to the fans there in Los Angeles? Did you? I mean, they moved from another L.A. team to the Raiders, or?
When we moved to L.A., we moved in the first year and subsequent years, we were winning. We gave them the very first Super Bowl
yeah.
championship team. Yeah, and
there's the addiction.
And we had a lot of fans down there anyway. And because myself being Hispanic, we in Plunkett, we developed a real great fan base from there. But it's interesting, when we were in L.A., a lot of fans flew down for the games from Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they're back in Oakland, a lot of fans, and you'll see planes with Raider fans flying up to Oakland for games at Oakland. So Raider fans are a pretty unique group, and they, you don't have to look very hard to see them. They stand out in any crowd.
That's true. I can also say the same for the Seattle Seahawks fans. I took a Spokane to Seattle flight one Sunday morning. Didn't take me long to figure out I was either on the wrong aircraft or something was going down. And
that's right.
From all over the state. Jim, in your business, how did you create a fan from a large supermarket? You seem to go into one of those these days, and you're perplexed. You're lost. I mean, there is no first name basis, or is there?
No. The supermarket business is, you know, changing rapidly with the competitive market environment that's out there today. And so you really have to work hard at recognizing the customer. And each week you have to identify different customers that, you know, that come in the store that you've seen before. And that's the person you kind of really want to target. And that's the person you want to turn into a fan. Instead of it just a customer that's just somebody coming in, a fan is somebody that's going to be loyal to you, and if a competitor opens up down the street, that you're still going to, that person is not going to go to the new competition, that they're going to come to you because you give them the service that they want, and you have the products that they want, and I think it's the individual attention, you know, that they get, and they feel like, although sometimes it's like I always work for a large chain, that it was more of a mom and pop, and they felt that they just felt good about their shopping experience.
But how do you do that now with the self-service, the kiosks, and especially in the large chains now? I mean, how do you reach out to a fan? How do you turn a customer into a fan with all this self-service checkout and so on in these large? How would you go about doing that?
Well, I just think you need to be visible. You need to be, you know, up front, and more of the businesses do have the self-checkouts, but they're still customers. But usually the ones that use the self-checkouts, they want to just get in and out real fast. And so you want them, they are a customer and they are a fan, but usually the fans are the ones that go through the regular check stands with the bigger orders and the bigger ticket items. That's the one that's going to really help your business and build your sales and build your loyalty.
And as a... You were a director, is that correct? For a
large? Yes. Uh-huh.
How many hours a week did you put in, Jim?
Oh, I put in around 60 hours a week.
And Tom, in contrast, a small business mm-hmm. owner is going to put in about 60 hours too. Head coaching, how many hours a week does that require typically?
During the season, I say maybe at least 12 hours a day, most days, some days longer, and maybe Saturday shorter, and then game day on Sunday, and then you start again Monday morning at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. So there are no days off in professional sports. And that's the one difference today as it was years ago. It's a year-round job with all the off-season camps and the free agencies and the scouting that you have to do. Very little time for a time off, so it does create some problems as far as raising a family, having a family. But I like, you know, Jim's, is it Jim, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. When he said, you make yourself visible. When you're a manager in management, when you have a venue that depends on people walking through the door, you make yourself or your directors visible so that they're easily found or easy to get, because that makes the person that walks in the door feel special. It's no different than I used to try to make. I made myself visible to all the players, and not necessarily all the fans, but I did during the off season make enough appearances, charitable appearances, to let the people know that we were also in the community, and I told the players to do the same thing.
Very important indeed. Jim, I really appreciate the call today out there in Southern California. I wish you the very best. Are you in retirement now?
Yes, I have retired and enjoying retirement life.
Are you a Raider fan?
Yes.
There you go. Good answer. All right, Jim. Thanks again for the call, sir. Greatly appreciated.
You're welcome, and thank you. Okay, take care. Bye.
Tom, how do you juggle a family and coach in the NFL today? How is that possible?
Well, you have to really be good with your time as far as quality time. You can't just, when you're home, you want to make sure that you're home and they know you're home and you're sharing that with your family, what little time there is. I think one of the biggest things that I did when I was coaching is I included the family in my profession. I tried to go to every game that I could, Little League, as far as mm-hmm. you know, my job would let me. But they used to go to the games, and then they go to the after game parties, and I had my boys that you know well. I took them to practice with me on Saturday mornings, and made them feel that they were part of that team. I brought them to training camp every once in a while. So those are important things. If you're a manager in a store and you have a day when you can, you bring your kids and let them see what you do and what is it that takes my dad away from me, because they resent that. You know how that is. They resent that unless they know what you're really doing.
Exactly right. In the car business, 14, 15-hour days, 6 days a week, definitely bring the family down, serve them lunch, have them mingle. Exactly. Involve them in what it is you do. Most important. A curious question for the NFL. Do they allow the family to fly with you to away games?
No. No, they don't. You know, Some will fly independently to some games, you know, some of the wives, maybe even some of the families. But on the team plane, no, there's just not any room. And, and,
And, you know, it's a one, you know, you play one game a week and it's a very big game. Every game is vital and you just, you have to make sure you're focused, totally focused, and there just isn't room for, you know, unfortunately, there isn't room for family life on the plane.
Right, that's great advice.
I've got your family actually is on the plane because that's your second family.
That's true. Yeah. Same with people who you work for in a small business.
Sure.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
One last question for you, Coach. And you had an innate ability to do this better than anybody I ever saw. What do you look for in players, specifically a Jim Plunkett that no one else sees? You were able to transform him or resurrect him, if you will. Everybody thought he was done. This is an amazing story to come back and win two Super Bowls, one as MVP. But the 49ers discarded him. He was pretty much done in the eyes of many, but not yours. How was that possible?
Well, what we did is Jim was pretty down and out when we got him. I personally worked him out and just to see if physically he still had it. You know, sometimes there's different reasons why players are without a home, and they're either beat up and banged up and can't perform physically anymore, or they're emotionally drained, or something has happened, traumatized them to where they can't mentally handle it anymore. So I worked him out, and physically he was fine. He had just gone through, you know, a real downtime with the 49ers and was feeling pretty low, and was thinking about, basically, I'm sure he was thinking about retirement, but we had just signed him and took the pressure off him. We were in a position then to let him come along slowly and let him learn our system and our way of life and our way of doing things without any pressure on him. And within a matter of a very short time, he fit in perfectly. He responded to what we did, and he responded well enough to help us win two Super Bowls and become an MVP in one of them, and have another part of his long career was very successful with the Raiders. So he blended, and we would do that with several players like John Matuszak and Lyle Alzado,
right,
people like that. They fit into our system more than they did elsewhere.
Exactly.
Because we allowed them to be personalities. We didn't say, this is the way you have to be, and you have to wear your
that's right.
your tie this way. You have to shave this way and hair
that's
this
right.
way.
And nobody did it better than you, Coach. Coach Flores, a pleasure and an honor to have you on the Steve Henry Show this afternoon on KKNT. I wish you the best. Let's keep the emails coming. I'd love to hear about where the kids are and what they're doing. Again, thanks, Tom, for being here today. Greatly appreciated giving up some of your Saturday, sir.
All right, Steve, and good luck with your book.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to take a moment, too, to mention the City Fest this weekend at Tepe Town Lake with Luis Fulau. A spectacular spirit-led event. I hope you don't miss it. It's going to be fantastic. I know RPR people will be there. Once again, thanks for showing up. We'll see you next Saturday. Bye-bye.